This is Digital Story Podcast number 812, October 12th, 2021. Today's theme is, if there ever was a time to stand pat. I have become very familiar with the term request stock alert. As I compare recent camera announcements with availability, I see there's a fairly wide gap. You can receive shipment on some items, but they may not be the exact thing that you're hoping for. And this got me thinking, maybe this is a good time to simply appreciate the equipment that I have and leave it at that. I explore this topic and many more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So believe it or not, what got me thinking about all this was my refrigerator here at the studio. I have a full kitchen at the studio where I eat two of my three meals a day. And the refrigerator is a very important component, as I discovered by not having a functioning one for almost 3 weeks. My refrigerator stopped cooling, so we had to figure out what was going on. So I called a local appliance store. They sent someone out. He does an evaluation. He kind of takes apart the front there. We don't have to pull them out to work on them anymore if it's electronics. And it was really funny. When he did drop that little panel where the electronics are, it looked like a Radio Shack project. I mean, there was a thermostat, and then there was a controller, what we call defrost controller, and a few wires, and that was it. He thought it was the thermostat. It ended up being the controller. I have a new thermostat and controller. What got me thinking about this topic was, however, that this local appliance store, they don't carry parts anymore. They used to have a whole warehouse full of parts for all the major brands. They don't do that anymore. Now the person comes out, he or she makes the evaluation, and then they order the part, and then you hope it comes, which, as you know, this day and age, that's a very hit or miss situation. And then if they get it wrong, you start the process all over again, which is what happened to me. We waited for the thermostat. The thermostat came. We installed it. Still didn't work. Then we ordered the controller, which costs a lot more. It did work. Lots of time goes by. And I was just thinking, you know, it's funny how many things are like that these days. I'm sure you have situations outside of the world of photography where you've encountered very similar things. The chip shortage, how it has affected just about everything from automobiles to, you know, electronic components, home theater, all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, there is our camera gear itself, which has many overlying factors going on at once. And I was just thinking, wow, I'm just going to do a look-see here on, you know, how many of the new announcements or cameras that I would be interested in reviewing, how many of them are actually available right now. So I went to B&H Photo. This is a company that we work with here at the Digital Story. And I just started looking at catalog pages. Here are some current cameras that have been announced or, you know, are fairly new, recently announced, and their status according to B&H Photo. Let me just read you this list. All of these have stock requests on them. In other words, you can't get them right now. The Fujifilm X-T4, the Fujifilm X-100V, the Fujifilm X-E4, the Fujifilm X-30 Mark II, the Canon EOS R5, Canon EOS R3, which is a pre-order right now, Canon EOS R6, body only, can't get it, stock alert. Canon EOS M50 Mark II, Nikon Z7 II, Nikon ZFC, either the body only or with the 28, can't get it right now, stock alert. The Ricoh GR3X, not available in the U.S. except through this one Amazon channel that I found, which I thought was interesting. The Sony Alpha A7S III, body only, Sony Alpha A1, body only, and the Sony ZV-E10, body only, all stock alerts. All stock alerts. In other words, if you want to order one and have it by the end of the week, that's not going to happen. Now, Pentax, Panasonic, and Olympus had good in-stock numbers. So if you wanted to order a Pentax DSLR or really any of the Panasonic or Olympus Micro Four Thirds cameras, you can get those right now. But by the same token, they haven't had a lot of new announcements later, other than the Panasonic did have their box of video just announced, which is an interesting device, but not really for our audience. So as I was looking at this, I was thinking, you know, since it's really difficult to get items right now, and since prices are going up, now, I think the price thing, when I looked into it, and when I'm talking about the pricing, I mean, you know, price increases across the brands. For instance, Canon has recently announced a price increase. They're not terrible, honestly. I mean, we're looking at a lot of times at around $100 for an expensive camera, that being the price increase, which in terms of percentage is relatively small. So as of right now, I would say that the price increases aren't the bigger problem. Availability is the bigger problem, but you combine the two, and it doesn't seem like an ideal time to be out shopping for camera gear unless you really need it. Just like this is not an ideal time to be shopping for a used car unless you really need one. It's a better time to be selling a used car again, and that is because of the chip shortage. So as I look at this and as I think about this, and then as I read articles about photographers who are actually paring down their collections, right, and selling some of the stuff on the secondhand market, I'm going, maybe that's a better way to go right now. If you're going to go with the flow, right, if you're going to go with what's happening in the photography equipment world right now, maybe it's more of a better time to sell gear than it is to buy gear, just based on all the stuff that's happening. I'm pretty good right now. I don't really have any gear that I want to sell. I've already pared down and I kind of like what I have. And I also don't really need to buy anything. So I feel like I'm in a pretty good spot. Where I really ran into this, though, is when I want to get my hands on something to review for the podcast. That isn't so easy. So I'd be curious to see what your thoughts are on this. Have you run into this? I know you're running into it somewhere, whether you're shopping for a car or electronics somewhere else, or a refrigerator, whatever it happens to be. The ripple effects of the pandemic continue to play out in our economy, and even in the world of photography, we are not immune. Here's our Inner Circle winner of Ben Long's new book. Last week, we had an interview with Ben Long, the practicing photographer. Really good interview. Got lots of comments on it. Thank you so much for everyone who commented about the interview. And then on Patreon, on our Inner Circle, I have a book to send to somebody. And all I was asking for is just tell me what part of the interview, what thoughts stayed with you the most. And I got good comments on the Inner Circle site. Thank you, all of our Inner Circle members who shared your thoughts. I enjoyed every one of them, but I had to pick one of them to send the book to. And that person is John Pemberton. And this is what John wrote that really struck a chord with me. There are a number of things that I liked that resonated, such as it's okay to shoot cliches, or that not every shot has to be the best ever. Some are simply meant to be supporting images for others or practice for the future. But the insight I'm going to use first and foremost is taking the practice of looking at other photographers' work to my photo club and pitch the idea of a photo book of the quarter that many of us get, review, and then share with others who do the same. Then, for one of our meetings, we discuss an image that we each liked most and why. And I just thought that that's really taking that second concept. I mean, I really agree about the first comment. I think the cliche images was a terrific part of the conversation. But I liked what John did here, where he's taking the idea of looking at other photographers' images as a very important component of us becoming better photographers, but he's taking that to a new place where the photographers, his peers in his group, his photo club, where they put together a photo book of images that they think are pretty good. And then they share that. So now they're looking at each other's work, not just on a screen for a few seconds during a club meeting, but in a book where they can actually live with these pictures for a bit. And then follow up by having a discussion about them, where each one talks a little bit about, you know, the picture that they liked the most that was in the photo book and why. And I just think that full circle, that's what I call the full circle of teaching there, you know, where you expose and then you think about and then you follow up. You know, that whole process is really embodied here. And John, I think that is a great idea. And in fact, I think it's such a good idea, I'm going to send you the practicing photographer so that you will have even more ammunition when you approach your photo club. Thank you, John, for being an Inner Circle member. Thank you to all of our Inner Circle members who participated. Not only was the podcast with Ben fun, but the follow-up with all of you was fun as well. Oh, and by the way, John, send me your mailing address. I'll get you that book. Adobe Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements 2022 announced with a new Sensei-powered technology. And this is from DP Review, and I have a link in the show notes so you can read the entire article. But these are new versions of both Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements software. And the reason why I'm bringing that up here is that, you know, you are the folks that other people go to when they want to know more about photography or when they're learning photography. And, you know, they ask your opinion of stuff. And I just think that these two packages get overlooked a lot. And, you know, the price point on them is quite good. And there's a lot going on here. I'm going to read you a little bit about what's going on with these new releases. And just keep it in your back pocket as an option if someone comes to you, because they might not be ready for Capture One Pro, but they may be ready for Photoshop Elements. All right, here we go. Adobe has announced the 2022 versions of Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements software. The applications are designed to make creative photo and video editing accessible and fun. To that end, Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements include what Adobe calls guided edits. This is the part that I thought we might want to note. These are step-by-step interactive tutorials that you can use on your photos and videos to achieve specific editing tasks. The new applications add 4 new guided edits, bringing the total to 87. The 4 new guided edits include a couple in Photoshop Elements, and the other 2 are in Premiere Elements. In Photoshop Elements, you can use the new guided edit to edit pet photos and extend photo backgrounds. For pet photos, you can adjust the color and lighting, select and refine detailed edges like fur, remove collars and leashes, and more. So, I mean, you're doing some pretty serious stuff here. In the guided edit for extending photo backgrounds, you can use content-aware fill technology to extend your image beyond its original crop, either to change an aspect ratio or just change up the framing. It uses more Adobe Sensei AI technology than last year's release. They add all sorts of new goodies, such as new slideshow styles, a revised organizer that lets you view GIFs in motion, and automatic software updates. You know, so that's all pretty good stuff. So these are 2 software applications that are sophisticated, and Adobe is really working hard to make them accessible to people that don't have a lot of experience in post-production. I think these guided tours are actually a good idea, and the price point is very good as well. Standalone versions are $99 for new users and $79 to upgrade. The bundle is $149 or $119 for eligible upgraders. Educational pricing is also available. Just something to know in case someone comes to you and says, I don't know what to do about image editing. I want to do some of these fancy things, but I don't really know how. Maybe this is a path forward. How I made a large wall print from an iPhone 6S image. So this is an article that I posted one version on medium.com, and I have the link to it in the show notes where I tell more of the story. And then if you want to know just the basic nuts and bolts of, you know, the screenshots of here I did this and here I did this, that post is on the digital story right now. So I've got it two different places, kind of two different slants on this topic. But the idea being that I wanted to make a 13-inch by 19-inch print from an image that was in my photos catalog. We wanted to do a Golden Gate Bridge shot. So I did search on Golden Gate Bridge, got all these shots come up. Lo and behold, the one that was picked, the one that the request to print image was one that was captured back in 2016 with an iPhone 6S while I was on a scouting mission for a workshop. And I'm going, great. Of all the shots, it had to be that one. So that original file was 3024, 3024 pixels by 4032 pixels. So if I printed at 300 dpi, which is where I kind of like to print these things, I could make a 10-inch by 13-inch print if I didn't crop at all, which wasn't quite enough. I wanted to get up to 13 by 19. So I said, all right, I'm going to sample this thing up. Now, sampling up software has been in the news a lot lately. A lot of these companies are using AI to enhance the resampling experience. In other words, adding more pixels to an existing picture. And that's great, but you know, the one thing that almost everyone has on their computer is some version of Photoshop. And one area of Photoshop that really hasn't changed much over the years is the image size. And you know, that's where you go up to the top, you go to image, select image size, and there you can sample up. And the reason why I use that and talked about that in this article is that everyone has it. And it's actually quite good, even though it isn't the latest and greatest technology, because it gives you, you know, all sorts of resampling algorithms to play with that they have. And for instance, for this one, for sampling up, I used Bicubic Smoother, which I've had very good luck with. And the fit parameter, I just went up 150%. Now, the rule of thumb that actually, this is funny, that Ben and I discussed this quite a while ago. He did all this testing on this, and he felt like that if you kept it to 150% per resample, that you could actually use that and go up a couple times if you needed even more. Just don't do it all at once. Don't do like 300%. Do 150%, resample, and then do 150% again. All right, well, I only need to do 150% once, because if I did it once, then Photoshop said that I can make a 15 by 20 inch print close enough for my 13 by 19, right? I'm in good shape with that. So, and that's at 300 PPI. I just wanted to roll that out there because, you know, there is a lot of tempting software out there. And by the looks of the test, it's really quite good. But this technique, if you have Photoshop on there and you just follow the screenshots that I talked about on the digital story article or read the post on medium.com, I got really good results. And in fact, when I made this print of the Golden Gate Bridge, which, you know, has all sorts of cables and lines and things in it, I can put my nose right on the glass of that print and the detail is there. And this is from an iPhone 6S photograph, shot as a JPEG, not even RAW or anything, shot as a JPEG using image size in Photoshop, sample it up, make a beautiful 13 by 19 inch print, put it on the wall along with all the other stuff that a lot of it's either by artists who sell their stuff or by cameras that have sensors much bigger than my iPhone 6S I used then. I was really happy with the results, and I just wanted to pass that tip along for you. Pear Gear reveals a 10mm f5.6 pancake fisheye lens for multiple mounts. Now, you can read this story on Petapixel, and I have the link to the entire story in the show notes. I'm going to read you a little bit about this. I was pretty interested in it. By the way, one of those mounts was Micro Four Thirds, so, you know, that's what got my attention. Here we go. Pergear has announced a new 10mm f5.6 fisheye lens for Fuji X-mount, Micro Four Thirds, and Sony E-mount. The ultra-wide manual lens provides a 172-degree angle of view, which the company says is perfect for exploring creativity through distorting and exaggerating normal perspectives. The new fisheye lens is made of solid metal, but weighs only 100 grams, 0.2 pounds. The front lens has a multi-layer coating that suppresses flare and ghosting. It also adds greater contrast and color reproduction when shooting in strong lighting conditions, the company claims. The lens comes with a built-in pedal-shaped lens hood to provide protection for the lens and to also prevent stray light from entering the lens and causing unwanted flare. The new Pergear 10mm f5.6 fisheye lens is available in their online store, get this, for $89. So you have a metal lens, manual focusing, and it looks quite good. It looks like the focusing looks very nice. And in Micro Four Thirds case, you end up with a 20mm f5.6. The reason why I go, man, I'm interested in this is because for years I've been using the Olympus 9mm f8 fisheye pancake lens, which, by the way, cost me $99. I like the lens a lot. I mean, I've talked about it many times. It's a lens that, because it's so small and light, I just keep it available, and I have taken many fisheye shots with it. I just love having, you know, that ultra-wide perspective sometimes. But the focusing on it, I mean, you know, it's just got this weird little lever that mine has become loose over the years, right? So even though I might put it at infinity, it only has three settings. So even though I might put it at infinity, if I'm not careful, I can knock it over all the way over to, you know, close up, which then really isn't good. Doesn't work well. So that part has frustrated me a little bit, that little focusing. I would call it a three-stop focusing lever, except it doesn't stop, right? It's just this kind of very loose focusing lever right now. The images with it have been pretty darn good, I will say. But the other thing is its maximum aperture is f8, and this Pergear is f5.6. So then I gain a stop. I get a much nicer focusing experience, and I don't have to give up a whole lot on size. The Pergear is a little bit bigger, but it's also kind of nicer, right? It's not just a you know, this plastic Oreo cookie. It actually looks like a real lens with real focusing and f5.6. So I thought, man, you know, I'm really tempted. Now, it's funny. I just talked about not buying new gear. How long ago? What, 20 minutes ago? 20 minutes ago, I just talked about not buying new gear. And then here I'm going, but it's only $89 and it looks fun. So I'm just going to leave it right there. I am tempted by this. I would like to replace my Olympus Oreo cookie with sliding lever focusing thingy, and it only cost me $89. I'm really tempted. If I do it, I promise I will fess up. I will fess up and tell you that I have it, and I'll let you know how it works. And if you get one, let me know how it works. I'm really curious about this. And by the way, if you put this 10 millimeter on the Fuji film, then that's only a 1.5. So then you have a 15 millimeter f5.6 for $89. Just saying. Right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. First of all, I want to thank our Inner Circle members and mention that we have our annual gathering of the clans. It's coming up on Saturday, October 23rd. So we're just all going to pile in to a Zoom call, or as many as folks that want to come. I just took a sneak peek at the pre-registrations, and we're going well. We've already got a good group. And but we still have room for more. I can take up to 100 on this Zoom call. And I just want to have an annual State of the Union for our Inner Circle members. I just thought it'd be fun If nothing else, we just see each other's little faces on the Zoom square and get a feel for who some of our peers are. We see their names all the time, but we never get to see faces. We never get to spend time with them. And, you know, that's the real goal of this thing here. So that's coming up on October 23rd. There's a post on the Inner Circle site. So, you know, you get all the information and how you can pre-register. And I hope you join us. I do. I hope you join us because I just think this is going to be a blast. And thank you to all of our Inner Circle members. And welcome to our new Inner Circle member. We have a new one sign up last week. Welcome. So happy to have you here. Thank you for your support and for just making the podcast that much more fun. I've received some nice notes from folks lately that have camera gear that someone gave to them. And I'm talking about analog camera gear that someone gave to them. Hey, you're a photographer. Do you want these old cameras? And now because of this whole donation kit thing, they may have said no before, but now they're saying yes because they know they have a place that they can donate it to where we can get it in the hands of photographers who want it. And I think the last three donations that came in that way. Someone approached them with the gear and they said yes because they had a place to send it to. And I just thought that was really cool. Having everyone in our audience aware of this possibility, then, you know, more opportunities come out of that. So the idea is that if you have analog camera gear that you want to donate to the film camera shop, I will send you the donation kit that has the box, has a nice little note that explains, you know, the process. And it also has a label, prepaid label. So all you have to do is tape the box together, put the gear inside, put the label on the outside, and then just go to www.usps.com. Let them know to pick it up when they come and deliver your mail. And then it comes to me. I put it on the bench, clean it up, make sure it works great, put it in the film camera shop, and get it in the hands of someone who really wants it. And it just works out so wonderfully. Thank you to our recent folks who donated. I appreciate it very much. Those cameras, they go so fast, really. You know, once they're cleaned up and ready to go, they don't stay in the shop long, and they're in the hands of someone who really cares about them. That is a win-win-win situation, and I truly appreciate it. And finally, I want to give a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. Yes, that printing project that I'm talking about where I printed the Golden Gate Bridge, 13 by 19 inch from an iPhone 6S photo that just looks beautiful, and you can put your nose right on the glass, and it still looks great. I put it on, and for those of you who are printing, you may be curious about this, Arctic Polar Luster shot. So I put it on a luster surface, and I really like the luster surface because it's not nearly as glary as the glossy, especially when it's hanging on a wall where light's falling on the wall. But it holds all the detail, and it holds the color saturation as well. It's a beautiful paper. It's a beautiful paper, and this shot looks great on it. And I know about this paper because I discovered it way back when I first started working with Red River Paper. I did a sample kit. It was in there, and I go, Arctic Polar Luster. I love this paper. And I always make sure I have it in stock. I ran it through the Canon Pro 100. It just came out on first try. And that's because I use that technique I talked about a few weeks ago, where I do the test prints on a little baby Canon with third-party ink. Once that test print looks pretty good, then I put it in the Pro 100 with the Canon ink because I want this to have every chance, this print to have every chance to last as long as possible and hold its color. So then I do use the Canon ink for the final print. But because I do the work with the little baby printer first, a lot of times that first print that comes out of the big printer is the one that I end up using. It's just such a great system. So big thanks to Red River Paper because they are just like in the middle of all this stuff that I'm doing. And in the end, I have this really beautiful thing hanging on the wall with their paper being at the very base of it. Isn't that cool? If you want to learn more about them, Red River Paper, just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. take you over to our landing page there. And remember, they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Lots of topics, lots of fun. Working on more stuff for next week. Until then, stay safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.